This podcast is part of the Gonna Geek Network. The opinion expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gonna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GonnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer, but my friends call me SP. And your reporters for this special summer edition of the Starling Tribune, looking back at Episode 7 from Season 1 of Legends of Tomorrow, are Chris.
Make sure Picard here doesn't get us killed.
And Neil.
Actually, I'm more like Sulu right now, or Han Solo.
Did you love her deadpan stare after that one, too? She's like, and she didn't say anything. She just finally turned around and left. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, July 14th, 2016, live on Geeks.live. And of course, we are streaming right now on Blab streaming service. It's blab.im, but you can find the Blab at geeks.live. Hey guys, we are just a few Gonna Geekers that normally discuss the CW TV show Arrow. Just a little reminder that I'm more of a sci-fi guy, but I have a ton of comics now, and I'm catching up to the lore thanks to folks like Chris.
One of us. One of us. One of us.
And Neil.
I haven't read any comics since yesterday. Guys, I'm shaking. I've got the withdrawals. I need to read some comics. It's been like 24 hours.
Get your hands off that Pokemon Go, Neil. Go read some comics.
I gotta catch them all, though, SP. I gotta catch them all.
I'm catching all the comics, so I know Neil's the same way.
Yeah.
Hey, while we're normally cover the CW show Arrow during this offseason, we are talking about what's happening in Legends of Tomorrow. We're talking about the 7th episode, which is called Marooned, as well as DC TV news articles and announcements that have dropped during the past week or sometime during the offseason that we haven't had a chance to cover already. And it will impact future episodes of Arrow when it returns. So it definitely might contain some light spoilers for that, but it will contain spoilers for Legends of Tomorrow, as well as upcoming episodes, so consider yourself warned. Hey, all of our past shows that have been published can be found at GuttaGeek.com. I miss saying it like that. Neil, we've entered into the area where you're going to go ahead and break down the current episode for us.
More than happy to, SP. All right, guys. As SP mentioned, we are talking about Season 1, Episode 7, titled Marooned. Original air date of March 3rd, 2016. Directed by Gregory Smith. Now, we've talked about Gregory Smith before, but actually in the context of Arrow. And if you remember, he is a successful actor, primarily on the show Rookie Blue, who made the switch over to directing. And sure enough, after taking 3 episodes of Arrow, he did 2 of Legends of Tomorrow, and he also has done 8 of Saving Hope. Now, the writers are really interesting. I found this really kind of cool. The writers are relative newcomer and a real industry veteran on this one. So the first writer is Anderson McKenzie. His writing credits are 2 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, 1 of The Tomorrow People, and 1 of Forever. So he's written 4 scripts. His only other credit on IMDb is 19 episodes of Scorpion as an assistant. That's it. So he got a break here.
I feel sorry for Anderson, but, you know, everybody's got to start somewhere.
And to get a crack on the CW network for Legends of Tomorrow and reaching into the Berlantiverse, that is awesome. And this was a character development and story-heavy episode, so it's a really good one to kind of dig into. Now, he was also paired with Phil Klemmer, who is definitely more of an industry veteran. He has 8 specific writing credits, 7 executive producer credits, and he's got a lot of credits that span not only the Berlantiverse, but lots of credits on Chuck, Tomorrow People, Forever. On Legends of Tomorrow alone, he's got 16 credits for developing stories, 5 for writing, and 3 for teleplays. He wrote 12 episodes of Chuck, He developed and wrote a ton of Tomorrow People on the CW, as well as Veronica Mars and Forever. So I think a really good pairing this week.
Yeah, that's right. We've talked about Phil Klemmer before. He co-wrote the first two episodes. He's the executive producer of the series, obviously involved with the pilot. And guys, we haven't talked about this at all, but since I did this, and I know Neil does it every week, when we talk about writing credits, it's actually writing the story, the teleplay for the episode. There's a lot of development credits on these that go to other people or whatever. We generally don't include them with the total number. So when Neil says he's got 16 developmental credits, that means he's actually been involved in 16 stories, but he's only written five. That's generally the case with senior people in the industry. We only count the writing credits for stuff that they've actually penned themselves. So just keep that in mind.
And again, sometimes you have executive or story editors that will come in afterwards and add some polishing or some fine touches, which again is very different than writing the teleplay, because once you've written the story, it needs some modification to get it into the scene format, the VFX formats, the transitions. So the teleplay writer will come in and add another level of sophistication. And maybe we can get Rum Daddy in here from our sister podcast, The Flash, to give us a behind-the-scenes look at some point.
Yes, and by the way, if you're interested in The Flash, if you're interested in Supergirl, I know Haley, who's the executive producer of those, have started to re-release those after she's gotten settled in after her move. So stay tuned to podcasts coming out on both The Crimson Comet and Like a Girl, and both can be found at GunnaGeek.com. Talking about those other series, we have been going through ratings on every week for Legends of Tomorrow. I've got the whole list in the show notes, and it's actually published in the show notes every week. So you could see 1 through 16, and you can see kind of the drop from episode 1 to episode 16. But what is interesting is we've been comparing it to other shows. So anyway, this week, episode 7, which aired on March 3rd, as Neil said before, 2016, had a rating of 2.28, which is pretty much smack dab in the middle between 3.21 for episode 1 and the season low, which is episode 12 at 1.78. But interestingly enough, Arrow was on a break, The Flash was on a break, and Supergirl was on a break. So there was no comparison, but generally it's been a little higher for those shows, and Supergirl like doubles or in some cases triples the ratings. And it'll be interesting again. I know I talked about it 3 weeks ago and 4 weeks ago when Supergirl comes back on the CW. It'll be interesting to see if they keep their ratings or if it goes down or whatever. I mean, if they keep the ratings, CW just won smashingly. I just don't think that's going to be possible because for some reason, people leave their TVs on for whatever channel they're watching, and it just rolls from show to show, and that's what happens for people that don't have cable or whatever. So, the theme for the episode, Marooned, you know?
This is deep. It's really deep, guys.
They're not on a desert island. They didn't take a 3-hour cruise. I don't know if I can go with this marooned.
But where's all the rum gone?
And it's not like there are maroon. I mean, it's not like they're University of Minnesota fans, right? It's not like they're painted maroon. They didn't go outside the Wave Rider and paint the whole thing maroon. So I'm just losing it, guys. Where's this maroon coming from?
They like Maroon 5 and Adam Levine a lot. That's where it comes from.
All right. So if you think about it, the ship that they went to rescue was marooned out in space. It was floating, depowered. It reminded me of a Firefly episode, one of the better ones. So the ship was marooned. Yeah, but that was it. And I don't know, maybe they could have called it Adrift. Maybe that would have been a better title. But yeah, it kind of worked.
You couldn't use Out of Gas.
Oh, Out of Gas would have been awesome.
You can't use it, though, because Firefly already did it for the exact same kind of episode.
And they weren't out of gas. You know,
Do they even have gas? I don't think so. I mean, I know Jack says an engine is an engine.
It depends who's cooking.
Maybe. I don't know.
The Rock is cook. Oh, wait. Sorry. We can't take everything back to The Rock. I'm sorry, guys. I won't do it.
As much as we want to.
So, Neil, there were some themes running through this episode.
Yeah, and this is what struck me in the rewatch, that a lot of characters talk about death and approaching death and what death feels like. We got Sarah talking about she was freezing to death with Leonard Snart. You know, they're talking about, well, what does it feel like? And she kind of shared that. And then Ray talked about, you know, oh, I was nearly dead. I think I did die. and then Rip's family, there was a lot of reflections on the death of his family, and that's why he's doing everything. So there was kind of a dark overtone to this, a lot of reflections on mortality. Didn't really play into the title of Maroon, but I think it was an overall kind of feel to the episode.
This, ironically, was, and I don't know if this is me jumping back into it after a few weeks or whatever. I did watch the other two episodes before I watched this one, like Star City 2046, and what was the other one? White Knights before that. I did watch those, and I watched this, so I wasn't coming into it cold. But I was like, I really enjoy this episode. This is one of my favorite episodes so far. Star City last week, not so much. White Knights, probably not so much either. But this one was really cool. And one of the things that drew me to it was that scene. I actually stopped everything that I was doing because I was doing other things. I've seen this before. I was just watching it to refresh. And Sarah started talking about her death. And I stopped and I was riveted. I was like, wow, that is... For this show, that is a deep scene, and that really drew me into it. Rip's family, we see where that goes eventually. I'm like, okay, it's nice. It was nice background, but Sarah was the real key there. And Ray Palmer, you know, again, we see where that storyline goes eventually, too. And so for me, the Sarah thing really grabbed me, and the space thing, and the CGI, and the fight. We'll get to it. I'm running a little bit ahead of myself, but it was a cool episode.
Well, Sarah's the big draw in this episode again, because it's another look into the character. Sarah is arguably the best character on Legends of Tomorrow. And I think you can say that because she gets an advantage if she was built up over a full season on Arrow and things like that, of course, too. So her backstory is a little more familiar to us, but the trauma that she has undergone, it's compelling. It's interesting to see her deal with that and relate the story of it. And did anyone else see any irony in the fact that Captain Cold was going to freeze to death?
There's a little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that was set up nicely.
Oh, no, but he's chivalrous, though. He gives her his coat. I noticed that. See? The shippers are going to go all over this man.
It's not the first time, though. He did it in Moscow.
He's got a sense of a chivalry about him. He's a gentleman. A gentleman thug, perhaps, but a gentleman nonetheless.
Michelle said it two episodes ago, the criminal with a code, and I think that's a really good way of looking at it. But I think that was done intentionally to further draw the differences between the two former partners. And they really played with that tension all throughout this episode. If we skip ahead to the final scene, man, did that tear your heart out as you were watching that interaction between those two characters?
Yeah, that hurt.
It's been a progression the last four or five episodes, really the whole thing of getting to this point with Mick. And against the team, which was another thing that made this episode so great. And you say Sarah's your favorite character, and that's cool. And how she was fighting and everything was really cool. I don't deny it. But Mick Rory is a character that I'm captivated with as well. So you've got Sarah and Mick Rory, and they're both going strong in this episode. Probably another reason that it is my favorite episode. But at the end, you're like, oh, and then you don't, if I'm going to spoil just a little bit, you don't actually see what happens for a while, and you're like, and you just meant to assume it, but you don't actually see it, so you know that they haven't showed you something that they're going to flash back to or show you something in the future or whatever. But at the time, I remember I caught this, I think, live that night. I'm like, oh, I want to see the next episode. And it's you can't watch the next episode now. You can, but back then you couldn't.
You guys south of the 49th parallel, not only do you have Pokemon Go, but you have Legends of Tomorrow on a streaming service. It is nowhere in Canada.
I bought it on Amazon Instant Video. I'm not rewatching it for free. I paid when it was on sale, $19.99 for the season.
Don't even have that option in Canada.
They're not even doing that. Oh, man. That's terrible.
Luckily, CTV is actually replaying it on the same schedule as we are podcasting about it 1 week ahead. So last week was Marooned. It was on the PVR.
Nice.
Hey, guys. So let's talk about time travel. We'll jump ahead because...
My headache is already coming in.
Well, there's not a lot of timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff this week with consequences and changing the timeline. I was more concerned with the fact that we have time pirates. We have people out there, and time pirates, they are in the time stream. They are messing with stuff with no code, and yes, the Time Masters are out there trying to fix it and get it, but there are people that can screw up the timeline. Doesn't that concern anyone?
Well, of course, you introduce time travel into any universe, and all of a sudden, look at the X-Men over on Marvel. I'm not intentionally crossing the streams. I'm just saying, look at what happens over there, and there's one thing I've learned about the X-Men from Lauren, is that they're constantly doing that in the X-Men, and you have to have consequences to that, and this is one of the things that I think eventually, if this show stays on the air, what happens at the end with Rip Hunter and his family, I think that's going to change by the time the show actually finishes. So just stay tuned on that. I mean,
you can't stop fate.
Well, how do you know whatever fate that you stop on is where, look at Back to the Future. Of course, somebody ran Back to the Future trilogy on 4th of July weekend. Of course, we had it on at the cabin because it was a rainy day and, you know, there was young kids that hadn't seen it before, hadn't remember seeing it before. It's the same thing. Who's the real villain in Back to the Future? And as far as time travel is concerned, it's Marty and Doc. I mean, poor Biff gets screwed over left and right. I think in this particular case,
you might be the only person I know. It's like, poor Biff.
I have good training on that. I'm not the only person. There's a lot of people that think Biff really got screwed over and all this. Because you take a look at what happens, and Marty and who's to say Marty and Doc are the right thing to do in all that? Just like in here, who's to say that Rip Hunter is right? Now, we see some things eventually. They're like, okay, well, it's justified a little bit what he's doing.
He's right in spite of himself is what we learn eventually in this show.
Yes. And actually, if you rewatch Young Justice, you know that the main villain is Vandal Savage. Therefore, anybody who opposes Vandal Savage is right in this show. It's the DC Extended Universe.
Well, take a look at Rebirth right now. What's going on in Rebirth?
Excuse me, you mean Rebirth. You got to say it right.
Rebirth. Take a look at what's happening in Rebirth right now. It's the same thing. People are changing time in the universe and everything.
Well, no. Let's back up a step. Let's go way back to the Watchmen. Dr. Manhattan has screwed with the timeline, and Barry Allen screwed with the timeline, and he thought he fixed it. So I would say that people aren't screwing with it. One character screwed with it. But whoa, we are off on a huge tangent right now.
You brought up time travel. It's your fault.
Damn it. Just call me Lobster. Hey, let's talk about the fights. We are an Arrow podcast. That means we have to talk about the fights in anything that we talk about. The first fight that actually grabbed my attention, guys, was the CGI dogfight between the Acheron and the Wave Rider. That was a decent little fight.
That was straight out of Star Trek II. Did you see it as it was firing, as it was coming over? That was the Reliant and the USS Enterprise. No bloody A, B, well, A, but no, it was the original one. It was no bloody A, B, C.
It was the original.
So, yeah, that scene, it was straight out of there. I was like, yeah! Tons of Star Wars references, tons of Star Trek references. This was just an awesome, probably sci-fi build is why I like it as well. But yeah, awesome CGI. And then you got exteriors of the Wave Rider running with the time engine with that little golf ball-y thing rotating colored in the front with LED lights, whatever. It was awesome.
And I noticed the difference between the engine exhausts for both the ships, blue versus red, so you could kind of tell them apart. And that was probably a functional difference, but it was just interesting to notice.
We see that design carried over later. Minor spoiler, you see other time ships in later episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, and none of them look quite the same. They all have different layouts. There's a distinctiveness about them. It's not like the old Star Trek where everything Constitution class had the exact same kind of ship hull design, minus lettering on it. And the Time Masters seem to all have different ships that are slightly different looking in appearance, which gives you easily distinctive visuals.
And it is more accurately representative of how naval ships today are actually built. Now, take a look at the space shuttles, OV-101 or OV-100, I guess, all the way through Endeavor, I think it was one, or Atlantis, I think it was 107. All those had the same basic plan form because it was wind tunnel tested upon reentry and they had to stick to that. But beyond that, you take a look at naval ships and you take a look at the submarine classes or the destroyer classes or the frigate classes or even aircraft carriers. There's never one that's exactly the same. And that, if you're constructing a bunch of time ships. I gotta believe they're not all on an assembly line, like one after the other. There's some hand built in this stuff. And I have to believe they're not like spec homes. I have to believe that the first captains actually sit down and order their home from the builder and say, no, I want the build out for the sunroom, or I want the finished basement, or no, I want the master bathroom with the two sinks and the jacuzzi tub. And I got to think that there's personalization going on in there.
SP, I'm going to go on a limb and say, have you done a bunch of home renos lately?
No. Well, there may or may not be one going on up at the lake. So there you go.
Alrighty then. Hey, let's talk about some of the hand-to-hand, though. We talked about the dog fighting. I really liked how we had concurrently Sarah versus Mick going on, while we had Rip versus the Time Pirate Captain, while we had the entire crew kind of going at it in the hallway. That was fun. Now, it probably wasn't filmed concurrently, but I think the way that it was cut and edited together was pretty damn cool.
Chris, the choreography, when they're throwing one person and then they cut the scene to another fight and the other person actually lands down and that sort of stuff. This was awesome. This was a better fight that I think, for me anyway, the cut back and forth as that three-tiered fight in Arrow season, I don't know, two or three, where they're doing that multi-tiered fight with Nyssa and Ra's al Ghul and Arrow and stuff like that.
Season three, it kind of gave me flashbacks a little bit to the fight that you had between Oliver and Deathstroke at the end, where you kept flip-flopping between past and future and how that all fit together. They like to do that, keep the camera moving back and forth as you change between either people or timelines.
Or the end of season two. Yeah, that was an awesome fight.
That's still my favorite fight of all time.
The Deathstroke wound is open for me again since I just watched Star City 2046 yesterday. I'm like, oh, you guys, oh, you're killing me. CW, you're killing me. But yeah, Neil, the fights were just amazing. So, Chris, in this episode, what was your favorite fight in this particular episode?
Oh, it's the dog fights. We don't get to see dog fights very often in these kind of shows. So it was a nice change pace. It made me kind of have fond memories of some of the Battlestar Galactica Viper v. Cylon Raider fights and stuff like that. Not because it's super reminiscent, but just a space battle where cool stuff's going on. I was like, oh, I haven't seen this in a while.
Neil, what was your favorite of the episode?
I actually, believe it or not, like the Rip Hutter fight, even though he usually doesn't jump out as my favorite character. But if we go back to the dog fight, you nailed it right at the beginning. I didn't think this was a Constitution class kind of flashback. This hit me like a Deep Space Nine, smaller, more agile ships. This was a Reliant battle for me. I was like, damn, I missed that.
Right. So my favorite fight was in the hallway where you had Iron Man and Kendra and Sarah going at it, Sarah with her staff. Yeah, okay, I get it. I just had to throw it in there. It's been a while. I've been gone for a while, guys. But yes, Adam in the hallway with Sarah and Kendra. And Kendra was holding her own, and she was not decked out in her wings or anything. This was just her fighting hand-to-hand, having been trained recently by Sarah.
You know she used to be a barista, right?
She did not say that in this episode.
I'm saying it for.
Okay, actually, now you've got me questioning myself. Wait a second here.
She recently said something about being Rosie the Riveter. I can't remember if that was last episode in this episode.
It was last episode, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, guys, I have just done a find and replace on the entire script for this episode. The term barista does not show up in the official transcript.
I'm just doing it for them so it stays through, so it stays existent as a trend.
Did you try caffeine, coffee, Flash? Is Flash in there at all?
I'm stopping there. It's a barista reference or nothing.
There you go. So yes, it was an amazing action scene. And oh, by the way, we haven't talked about it yet. And I'm just going to interject it here. The pirate is Leoben from BSG. It was awesome. It was a clone and he was awesome. You know what? His resemblance to Corporal Hicks from Aliens, what's his name, is amazing. And I was like, oh, is that him? No, but he would be really old and he's not on here. So for those of you wondering, the actor's name is Callum
Keith Rennie.
Right, yeah. And he is fun to watch. He has a ton of sci-fi credits.
You know, and I think BSG must have been on the mind because you talked about the Viper battles, and now we've got some BSG cast and crew on this. there's probably some crew members, given that BSG was filmed here in Vancouver as well. But what drove home the BSG reference for me was spacing all the pirates at the end of the episode. That was like, oh man, I haven't seen a good spacing since BSG. Like, it's cold, it's not a good way to go, but aw.
Poor Gaeta and Zarek.
Yeah.
You don't know. They could have been snatched up by a stealth viper.
What you don't really know is that as soon as they got spaced, the Wave Rider broke the space-time and dimensional continuum and came and picked them up, and they're going to show up in season 6 of Legends of Tomorrow as the predominant big bads.
Guys, it's happened in Doctor Who as well with the Doctor's wife, Alex Kingston. She actually dives into space and requests the TARDIS to be in a certain... Spoilers. Literally, in this case, spoilers, to be there. So she dives in and I believe goes all the way into the pool. Not sure about that. But yes, it happens. And Rory's been at least part of it like that, I guess. I can't remember who's in the scene or not. GPR, please don't hate me. Gallifrey Public Radio, the Doctor Who podcast on the Giddy Geek Network. Don't hate me. I don't remember the scene.
So a lot of good fights, good dog fighting, lots of good time travel. Let's talk about the characters. And I think, guys, given that we had all the flashbacks and, you know, being an Arrow show, we got to talk about flashbacks. But moreover, let's just talk about Rip Hunter. And I want to start off by saying, SP, while you're away, we started rating Rip's captaining skills every episode on a scale of 1 to 10. And I'm going with 1 being Captain Crunch and 10 being Captain Picard. So, Chris, we'll start off with you on a scale of 1 to 10. Rate him as a captain this episode.
For this episode? I was originally going to make him be fairly low, but then you got to remember, he had a bunch of contingency plans in place already with Gideon. So he had the forethought to know that S could go down. So I'm giving him 4.5. We'll round it up to a 5. He gets a 5 in the captain's score this week.
Automatically giving him 2 points. Why is that? Because in this episode is the first time that I see him use not one, but 2 types of captain arm controls. He is pointing at that faceplate really hard, just in the same spot. He's not like going back and forth and trying to do a bunch of different functions like they do on Star Trek The Next Generation. He's got one button that he's pushing, and it's probably the I need to go fast button. Boost, 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 boost. And then he just ratchets it up that control arm throttle and boom, off they go. So that's 2 points right there.
It's the ludicrous speed lever, okay?
Exactly. For inventing or actually actuating a second control on the captain's chair. So that's 2 points. So his interaction with Mick, that's like minus 8 points right there.
Yes.
So he's at minus 6 right now. The contingency plans, pretty good. So I'll give him 4 points for that. So minus 2. And then this is the first time that we see a lot about his family and whatever. So I'll give him 2.5 points for that. So I'm at 0.5.
Which actually means that Captain Crunch would make a better captain of the Wave Rider than Captain Rip Hunter.
I think so in this particular episode. I mean, the dude has his crew captured and he has his ship invaded. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's happened to all the Trek captains, though.
I am giving him a 2. So, you know, we can average this out. But pissing off one of the most unstable members of your crew to his face in the brig, losing it as a captain, you should not lose it in front of your crew, and basically causing the whole scenario where his ship gets invaded by the pirates. Yes, you know, you almost had me, Chris, that his contingency plans, you know, and the pre-programmed attack runs and holographic runs. Very cool. I would have given him credits for that. But yeah, minus 8 is generous, SP, for the rest of his behavior as a captain. So I'll give him a 2. Hell, you know what? I will give him a 1. I will put him on par with Captain Crunch.
All right. We just have to get somebody impersonating Captain Crunch and see how they're going to run the Wave Rider, and we'll be fine there.
I'm really shocked that I'm the positive one for once.
Oh, man. As soon as he interacted with Mick and he said that he had the intelligence of meat and that he was only there because he was a package, I was like, dude, you don't do that to anybody. If you're the leader, you don't do it. You might dress somebody down if they're misbehaving or you need to get them in line or you need them to do something, but you never degrade them like that, ever. You go after their actions and you try to correct their actions, but you never tell somebody they're stupid. You never do anything about their person. It's always the actions. And he just went after him left. And I'm like, no, I know why Heatwave is acting like he is.
Yeah, and nothing that Heatwave did during storming the ship got them in that position. It wasn't him. It was Rip leading them in, Rip picking the team, Rip going down the hallway. I mean, Jax, as soon as Rip said, yeah, we're going to go respond to this distress call, the look on his face is like, well, even I know this is a trap. Like, this is a dumb course of action to just, hey, let's just board the ship and go and see how they're doing with, just bad call, Rip. Bad call all around.
Do you expect anything different from him?
No, that's why it's fun to rate him.
Yeah.
If he was a 10 every week, I mean, maybe it'd be different. It'd be like, how great was Captain Picard this week? Oh, he was dreamy. I mean, that might be fun, but that's...
Well, talking about Captain Picard and being dreamy, we can actually rate two other captains this episode. We can rate acting Captain Palmer and then the real acting Captain Kendra. So do you want to start with rating acting Captain Palmer? You want to try that one?
I'll start, but I'm going to need some help with this one, guys. What does meh rank as?
That's decidedly average.
Yeah.
But 5 feels like it's a bit generous. I'd give him a 4.
I was going to go 3, but okay.
2 or 3, yeah. He's just... Yeah.
Well, he didn't screw up. He didn't cause his crew to mutiny. And then he went outside to fix the ship. It's like, okay, the captain will go on the away team. And it happens, right?
Not next gen. Because Will Riker was the dreamy away team leader then.
He did sit in the chair to try to make some video game-like manual movements too, right? Evasive maneuvers. So, okay, I'll raise him up. I'll go with a 4 for that because he tried.
Aw.
Mm-hmm.
But the parallels to Sulu and all the geeky references by Ray kind of won out for me.
Oh, I love all the geeky references that Ray gets to make, and he gets them all the time. They're great lines.
Indeed.
Yeah, we've talked briefly about how Hawkgirl was actually probably the best de facto replacement captain. I just have to mention that when Ray comes in from the airlock, physically ripping off the Adam chest plate can't be good for the suit or Ray underneath it.
He can repair it.
Just like, raw! Kendra, smash!
He's got technology from the future. It's fine. He can fix it later.
Quick release straps on that.
I'm sure it'll be modified soon.
Yes. And it's really, you know, as far as Kendra is concerned, it's the start of their relationship. And we're going to see more of that in 1958 next week.
Yeah.
Or the week after, I guess.
I had to watch that going, really? Because it's not just been in this episode. It was in the previous episodes as well. And it's like, I really wish we didn't have to go down here. And that's one of the storylines where I'm thinking we could have cut out whole episodes based on the time that they spent on that. So it's like, that is meh for me.
Well, I wouldn't say that our podcast focuses on the shipping aspects of Arrow or Legends of Tomorrow. It's kind of not our forte, guys. Well, maybe except for Chris.
I am all about it, man. All about it.
No Katie, no Arrow, right?
Yeah, no Laurel, no Arrow. I quit. She's my favorite.
I think one of the best characters this episode, though, was Captain Cold. I think he had the drama at the end. He had the relationship moments with Sarah in the brig. He had the big decision items with Rory at the beginning and later. Yet, as soon as there was the attack the ship, his first line, without any hesitation, is, my partner's on that ship.
Mm-hmm.
So there is still that inherent loyalty, even after what happened in the last episode with having to cold cock him in Starling City 2046. His gut reaction is, that's my partner, I gotta take care of him. And it's not until really Rory's betrayal of the entire team when he realizes, okay, I gotta make a break.
I can't stand with him anymore. I can't stand up and protect him and anything like that. Although he sort of does when it's all said and done. But yeah, spoilers.
True. So I really enjoyed Snart in this episode as well. And I think you're right. The whole thing about him talking about Mick and Mick standing up for him the first day and everything, going back to that, Snart will never do anything against Mick, ever, if he can. So that's cool. But my favorite character of the episode was actually Stein, because dude had it going on, and it wasn't Dick Stein as it usually is. I mean, he's actually doing stuff. He must have been doing some of the training with Sarah too, because he's got some moves without Firestorm now.
It's accurate. I mean, and it's fun because he's channeling his inner childhood heroes that he saw on TV as he's doing this. And you're like, this is what I would like to imagine I would be like if I got to go into space and be on a spaceship and do all this cool stuff. But it's not what I'd be like. I'd be like, oh my God, this is cool. And I'd geek out and have no suaveness about me.
Did anyone else think when he went behind that bulkhead and the sliding door to go after that pirate that had the very running man beret on, that I was like, oh, he's going to get his butt kicked. And he came out wearing the beret, having taken out the pirate. I'm like, I wasn't expecting that. Even on a rewatch, I'm like, I wasn't expecting that. Stein was destined to get his butt kicked there.
I know. And he did come out with a hat, and the hat, and him coming out with the big grin on his face with the beret on, that was the one of the best parts of the episode. And he was amazingly efficient. And I can only think, is it the beginning of this episode that they're like, we've been here a week, right?
Yeah. No, it was a full week.
Yeah. So I can only imagine that Sarah's got everybody in the training room going, okay, guys, we're here. Let's do some things. And that's what makes them effective in this episode.
It's boot camp.
Yeah.
I could see it. It's possible. They leave a lot of stuff in between the lines for you to assume what might be happening between episodes.
Yeah, but you're right. Stein was a fun character for a change. And it's really interesting when they let Victor Garber choose some scenery. And honestly, he did this episode with the beret on, with that'll teach you not to mess with a physicist. Like, come on. I'm surprised he said that line with a straight face. But he was having fun. And it wasn't just fighting with Jax about stuff. It was just getting out there, embracing who the character is. I think it was awesome. And it was fun. And we've said it before. This isn't high drama. This isn't, you know, a PBS period piece. This is our Thursday night popcorn. Let's get as many DC cameos as we can in there and let's have fun. And they embraced it with the Stein character this week.
They did indeed. I had, for everything that we've said, it was just a cool episode. Of course, there's things wrong with it, but like you're saying, time travel, bad guys involved. Of course, things are going to go wrong. And that's why you have time cops. Did I say that?
Time cops.
So I enjoyed it. Chris?
Solid episode. It was fun. I like space battles.
I'll give it to you. Fun episode.
All right. So, Neil, what do we have to look forward to next episode?
Well, next week, we have season one, episode 8 of Legends of Tomorrow, titled Night of the Hawk. The summary is that the team tracks Savage down to a small town in Oregon in the 1950s, where they suspect he's involved in a recent string of murders. And if you remember how this episode ended, the captain of the Acheron and the computer, which also started with a G, I think it was Gordon in this case. Remember, all AIs have to start with a G in this universe for whatever weird reason it is. He says he's in Oregon in 1958, so that's where they're headed. The director is Joe Dante. Writers are Sarah Nicole Jones and Courtney Norris.
This is an awesome episode. Can't wait. Another strong Sarah episode. So it'll be fun to watch. Say, we have been doing this if you're new to the podcast, we've been doing this for a very long time. We do a bat checklist. It evolved into a DC checklist. Well, now we just do pop culture and DC Easter eggs because it's just gotten that much bigger with these CW shows. And there was an article on comicbook.com the next day after this came out with a bunch of individual Easter eggs. And we're just going to run down all of them. And this is a long list. So Neil, why don't you start us off?
Sure. The first character is Bonnie Baxter. Now, if you were paying attention, Bonnie Baxter, with that good comic book alliteration, is the captain of the Acheron. Now, if she sounds familiar, this is a deep cut from the DC universe. She is a canon character. She's actually from Time Master's lore, and while working as an academic, she had an affair with another professor at her college, and when that affair threatened to ruin both their careers, Baxter tracked down Rip Hunter, who was assembling a group of adventurers to travel through time with him. Both she and her black sheep brother joined Rip's cause in the comic books. So that was definitely a deep cut Easter egg from DC.
It's true. And her ship is also a reference we found out. The Acheron In the pre-Flashpoint DC universe, Asheron was the name of a powerful ghost who briefly ran with Shadow Pact. In the post-Flashpoint DCU, it's a demon. There's also a location which appeared during Legion at one point, and given the significance of time travel to Legion brand, there might be some inspiration there. So, some more cool ship facts.
And Asheron does show up in a lot of Greek and Roman mythology, especially when you start talking about the River Styx and the offshoots and the Greek and Roman underworld. So, like any good naval vessel, there's a grounding in some classical mythology and literature as well.
So this next Easter egg that we're going to go through, I actually thought about this and another one that's not on the list. It's Time Bandits, which didn't exactly go like this, but you got to equate time pirates, time bandits, you got to do that. And of course, also space pirates, you got to think about ice pirates as well. I'll throw that one in there.
The next one, if we're talking about Stein and his childhood, where he thought about Space Ranger Rick Starr. So, believe it or not, that is a Golden Age sci-fi comic from one of the DC predecessor comic book lines. So, it's funny, referencing actual characters, and in the comics, the son of wealthy businessman Thaddeus Starr, Rick, becomes Space Ranger to protect Earth from criminals and alien invaders by using his money, because who wouldn't, to create a base in the asteroid belt.
Yes, so we touched on earlier, Ray is full of iconic science fiction references today. He sat in the captain's chair where he made Star Trek references. He then talked about Star Trek and Star Wars lines while he was evading an attack and said he was more like Sulu than Han Solo, much like Neil had said at the very beginning of the show.
So, guys, did you catch a hidden C-3PO reference with the odds? 3,720-1, that was in this as well. For those of you wondering, in Empire Strikes Back, C-3PO is telling Han Solo as they're trying to go through the asteroid belt, don't go through that. The odds of surviving are 3,720-1. That is the exact odds that were given in this episode. So for some reason, that number just sticks in my head. So the next one that we're going to talk about is a character called Imperilex, which is one of the villains whose name was a secret code between Rip and Gideon. And apparently, it was a Superman villain, right, Neil, who attacked the DC Universe in an event called Our Worlds at War, which I've never read.
It was a classic storyline. So, yeah, Imperiex actually is another canon reference, another deep cut, and one which included Doomsday. So, it's understandable Rip would use Imperiex's attacks as an example that Rey is a badass. The next reference was another one, if you remember, when Rip was bragging about how hardcore Rey was, he said he even beat Kanjar-Ro, which was another code. Well, Kanjar-Ro is another deep cut canon reference. This case, Kanjar-Ro is the dictator of a planet that's pretty much always at war with its neighboring worlds. He's also in one of the earliest Justice League comics as a villain, and many years later was briefly a member of Rebels as well. So, another deep cut.
So, if you guys didn't know it, read the comics, you'll find that Hunter is not Rip's real last name. It's actually Carter, as in Michael John Carter, who's a superhero better known as Booster Gold, aka Rip's dad. So, the idea that the Time Masters didn't use their real names so that villains couldn't smother them in their cribs, it isn't a new one for TV, it's been hinted at for a while, and was outright established in Geoff Johns' run during JSA.
So we have pirates. I talked about ice pirates and time bandits before. We're going to talk a little bit about Pirates of the Caribbean and the idea of parlay. So if you watch the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, which I have, they're actually quite fun movies for the most part. They have this thing where the pirate code calls for a parlay and they stop fighting and they actually sit down and talk and try to figure out their differences and come to terms, whatever, without everybody being killed. Because let's face it, they're pirates. They don't have vast armadas behind them for the most part, and they don't have vast depots to fix their ships and what have you and everything like that. So they are really looking to get the maximum amount of value for the minimum amount of effort. And if that includes some talk, which they can maybe sucker somebody in to maybe, you know, take them out or whatever, that's part of the pirate code, right? So that was used in this episode as well. And I thought that was a really unique identifier in this episode.
The next one's kind of interesting. So we've had a lot of deep cuts of DC canon characters, but the character of Time Master and Coburn is actually probably a little wink and a nod to one of the writers, Jake Coburn, over on Arrow. Because again, Arrow was the show that spun off Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. So every once in a while, you'll see this. They make a reference to one of their peers over on Arrow. So likely a reference to Jake Coburn.
That'd be interesting. So I don't get this one. You guys are going to have to explain it to me. The next one they have in the article is Ray Palmer's first pet was apparently named after a best-selling toy, one that crawls. Is this Creepy Crawly reference, or I don't get it.
So if you remember back in the episode when Kendra was saying, well, tell me about your favorite color. Well, I don't have a favorite color. Tell me about your first pet. He goes, ah, Slinky. Slinky was my first pet. He goes, was Slinky a cat or dog? He goes, no, I'm allergic to cats and dogs. Anything that doesn't have scales. Slinky was his pet Burmese python. So named after the snake-shaped springy toy Slinky. So,
I just space cadetted on that one.
And for the last one, I'm going to have to call a friend. And Neil, you're just going to have to do this one for me as well.
Well, unfortunately, Golden Age DC is not my strength, but we talk about John Valor. So you might have caught in passing reference that was the pirate captain's name. Well, John Valor is a very different kind of pirate. He was more of a good guy. He was known as the Black Pirate in Golden Age DC Comics. He was a British nobleman who took to the high seas to terrorize the Spanish. Kind of like the Scarlet Pimpernel, I guess, in a way, during the late 16th century. So, again, another, you can tell the writers probably just went into the big DC almanac, said pirate names. We need pirate names from canon. Oh, here's a pirate name, John Valor. Okay, make the pirate captain John Valor. Nothing at all to do with the canon character, but yet still was still a pirate of sorts.
Phil told, make it so, and it happened. So there you go. So that ended the Easter eggs for the episode. If you think we've missed one that should have been mentioned, please let us know. Get a hold of us at all the means, our Twitter account at Starling Tribune, Facebook account Starling Tribune, or you can hit me up on email, StargatePioneer@gunnageek.com. So we're going to run down a little bit of the news. We're going to start with Arrow specific news. And I guess, Chris, they're talking about a shirt allergy?
Again, yeah, Stephen Amell, we know he doesn't like to wear shirts on set. It's something about comfort, I've heard. But in all seriousness, the first season 5 set photo was revealed. I believe Stephen Amell tweeted it. And of course, he has no shirt on. Proves just how cut he got in those, 5 weeks between TMNT's press tour and the beginning of Arrow when he was like, I need to get back to the gym. What?
Dude. Oh, I caught a few videos of him on the treadmill and stuff like that and the elliptical, whatever, just trying to work it off with it. One of which was with his kid and stuff. It was kind of cute, but at the same time, I'm like, I wish I could do it. And of course, if I had 18 hours a day that I could dedicate to working out, I'd probably be a little bit more shapely than I am. But good on you, Stephen, for making it happen, because you're going to make a lot of people happy.
And Stephen, we really hope you're able to conquer the shirt allergy that you have. I'm sure there's some kind of medication that we can find you that can help you with this terrible affliction that you have incurred.
I'm betting we're actually in the minority of people that, and you know what? I hope he doesn't come over the shirt allergy, because it is gym motivation. I don't know if you guys have been following him on LinkedIn as well as Facebook. He's been posting some of his workouts at the infighting MMA gym that he goes to out here in Burnaby. And yeah, 5 different kinds of chin-ups followed by ball crunches and pikes. And the really neat thing is his trainer is posting videos of what he's going to make him do the next day. And Katie Cassidy has actually been doing those workouts and throwing down the gauntlet separately, saying, hey, I've already done it, Steven, your turn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. Now, as far as a tit for tat on TV, you know, I just watched the season 2 premiere of Dark Matter. And, you know, after watching that, I'm okay. You ladies can have whatever you want on CW. I'll go over to the Sci-Fi channel and get my views in on clothesless actors. We'll just leave it at that. So what do we got next, Neil?
Well, we talked about this last week, that the former WWE wrestler Cody Rhodes is coming to Star City. And Cody Rhodes has been tweeting out and posting on social media some images. One of the first ones he put out was him entering the gym with an Arrow Cody Rhodes jacket on that says Destroy Queen, which is probably the episode title underneath it. So he's getting ready for it. He also had one at the Arrow writer's office where it shows him taking Stephen Amell pictures off the wall and kicking them and smashing them, probably fakely, but still having some fun with this mock rivalry the two characters have going on. And again, it's worth remembering that both Stephen and Cody Rhodes have teamed up on a bunch of charity fundraisers for sick kids. So they're playing it up for this. They're having a lot of fun. I, for one, cannot wait until we get them on screen together.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. And by the way, our pals over at Audibly Exquisite think so as well. If you want to catch their episodes, go over to GunnaGeek.com. They are basically a general geek culture podcast, but they went into this Cody Rhodes a couple of weeks ago and I clamored it. So go catch the clamor and get the link to their podcast. Peter and Mr. Melnick and Mike Noren are awesome talking about this stuff. So now we're going to get into the general DC TV news, and we have a little, I guess, spoiler from Miss Katie Lotz.
I'll take this one. So she actually got on social media today, and she had the cover of her script for episode one. So remember, they're launching about a week behind Arrow and Flash. So they've just started filming. They've been at Arrow and Flash here for a while. And the episode title is Out of Time. And like any good script, it's got the rest of the production details on the front. Story by Greg Berlanti and Chris Fedak. Teleplay by Mark Guggenheim and Phil Klemmer. Dermot Downs is the director. And it's really interesting that Dermot Downs was also the director of the season one finale. So it's really neat bookending season one and the beginning of season two with the same director. And I'm sure that'll maintain a consistent feel between the two, which is pretty cool. It would be really neat if it didn't skip a beat and just picked up. And like most of the CW shows, it didn't actually add 8 months for you to catch up through exposition.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So, Chris, we have our indications from The Flash, which should make our pals over at the Crimson Comet happy.
Yes, there's been a bunch of spoiler photos taken on set at The Flash. We now have a new dark speedster of some kind headed to The Flash. He's got a really cool black suit. I don't know who he is. Maybe he's the Black Racer of Earth 2, or maybe he's from Earth 2, or a result of something out of the Flashpoint event. I have no idea who he is. The costume's very different. I don't know if I like it or not yet. I'll say different just to keep it strong, keep it politically correct, I guess. And there's some guesses it might be Spartacus and Vampire Diaries star Todd Lassence, who might be this character since he's been spotted on set alongside Keenan Lansdale. And I cannot say his name at all. The guy who plays Wally West, because I'm terrible at name pronunciation.
I'm not the only one. Ha ha ha.
The secret is just say it, smile, and keep moving. Don't question the name. Just keep running with it.
And talking about running with it, why don't you take the Wally West story?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. Because this week, the Flash production crew has put out actual press photos, and we've seen a lot of shots from the sets of Ken and Lonsdale in costume. And he is Kid Flash, and it is pretty brilliant. It's the yellow suit with red accents. The cowl doesn't go all the way up. If you're familiar with Wally West's character, you still have the hair sticking out of the top. Guys, what do you think? Because I think it's awesome. Feel free to disagree.
It is perfect. It is exactly what I remember from the comics. And I sat there and I went, well done. This is how you keep me on board. You make an almost 100% accurate to the comics costume and pull it off. So I just sat there. I was like, golf applause.
Ethan Wilcox in the chat says he loves the new Kid Flash suit.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I'm with you.
Now, this next news story is like, yay, but it's also, why don't you tell the people what we're talking about, Neil?
Sure. So we've had a few announcements of people joining the Supergirl cast this week. So the first one is Felicity and Cougar Town alumni Ian Gomez has been tapped to play Catco Editor-in-Chief Snapper Carr. So he is a canon character, and it sounds like they're bringing him in to push the Catco staff harder, but that probably means that Calista Flockhart isn't going to be as present if there's a new editor-in-chief at Catco. So there's been a couple of things theorized. One is that in the drive to cut the budget for the show with the move to CW, maybe they're not going to get as much of Calista. The second is maybe she just doesn't want to come up to Vancouver as much in film. Whatever it is, I think we're all going to be expecting great things from Ian Gomez. And I, for one, hope that he really kicks some butt on that show, because they're big shoes to fill.
Most definitely. We have some more casting news coming up out of Supergirl also, where the family's Floriana Lima lands the role of Maggie Sawyer in the upcoming season 2 of Supergirl. Why that sounds familiar? Well, Maggie Sawyer was an openly gay detective who had a relationship with Batwoman in the comics. She was created by John Byrne, first appearing in the Metropolis Special Crimes Unit in 1987, dealing with metahuman threats. This version of the character is described as being, quote, a detective for the National City PD who takes a special interest in the cases involving aliens, end quote. So, we're going to get some more cops that have a bigger influence in the Supergirl world, potentially not as trusting in Supergirl and all the aliens around them. Who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely with the change to Vancouver for shooting, there's, and as you change from CBS to CW, you try to evolve the show, you try to take it into a storyline that they can actually sustain. There's going to be some changes, and I don't think everybody's going to be really happy with all of them, but I really like the show season one, so I'm really hoping for a strong season two. Now, for those that are just waiting for this news flood to come in just a couple of weeks, now, actually next week, SDCC is right around the corner. So if you're listening to this right when the podcast comes out, you're going to get it right before you go to SDCC. None of the three of us are going to San Diego Comic-Con. I've been before. Neil, I think you mentioned you have been before. Is that right? Or
I've been to Emerald City, but I've never been to SDCC.
Yeah, so I've been focusing on smaller mid-level cons, and I might go to Dragon Con. I was at San Diego Comic-Con in 2011. I just know that a lot of news happens, and if you take a look over on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is my other show on the Marvel Universe, there's a big thing about Ghost Rider going on right now with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's stuff going on with Warner Brothers there too, though.
So it's been really interesting. I think over the last 7 years, Warner Brothers has picked up the cover of TV Guide the same week that SDCC is on. And this week it's, or, you know, coming up during SDCC, it's pretty cool, actually. So they've got different collectors' covers coming out for TV Guide. They've got, now this is cool, WB Associate or Warner Brothers Associate shows. So they've got Supergirl cover, a Flash cover, they've got a Supernatural cover, and a Blindspot cover. Which is really interesting because Blindspot isn't even on the CW. Blindspot is still on NBC, but they're all Warner Brothers show. And that is the thread that ties these guys together.
And they're almost all Berlanti shows too, because isn't he in charge of Blindspot?
He is.
Have you guys watched all of season one of Blindspot?
I quit about a third of the way through. I just had too much other stuff I was watching, so I got out.
Yeah, I'm about 75% of the way through on the off season now. I've started to catch back up, but it's going slowly.
So I backed away at the midpoint. I said, okay, I'm done, because they got to a point where they showed me kind of where the show was going to go, at least for the second half and maybe the future of the show. It's like, eh, I'm not as interested. Of course, wow, Sif being on that show. I'm like, oh, that's probably the one thing that kept me in it. But I don't know. It's just not grabbing me as much. It was a definite renew, though. So obviously, it's got a strong audience. It's just that genre, that cop show, that CSI-ish sort of thing that is light, that's not really getting into the actual science. I don't know. I just don't do well with it. But a lot of people like it, so I'm not going to poo-poo on their parade. Enjoy it while you have it, and it's coming back for season two, so have fun with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And hey, before we move on to toy and geek news, we were talking about other impacts of Supergirl moving to Vancouver. If you're a fan of the show American Ninja Warrior, there is a really interesting linkage to the Supergirl show this week. One of the stunt women on the show, Jessie Graff, absolutely destroyed the obstacle course on American Ninja Warrior. And I don't know if she's going to be doing more CrossFit Games type stuff for American Ninja Warrior, or she's going to come up to Vancouver to keep working on the show. But whatever she decides to do, you know, do yourself a favor and check out Jessie Graff's run on American Ninja Warrior. Talk about destroying both the salmon ladder and the wedge. Oh, yeah. And doing it all dressed as Wonder Woman.
Yeah, she absolutely crushed it. She also has a really cool video that went viral probably a few years back, which is the live action Peter Griffin versus the chicken fight, where she is the chicken. and they do a live action stunt fight that is probably 6 minutes long and also very well done.
So Neil, now you got to talk about your dolls.
Do I?
Yes. It is time for you to talk about your dolls.
Doll time.
Well, like many good geeks, I'm a fan of the DC action figures. Now, while I'm primarily a Funko collector, I do have a couple of other Green Arrow collectibles. So the DC collectibles line, being one of the most popular of these action figure lines, has just announced that a ton of DC TV figures are coming out. Now, this is going to be adding on to the existing Flash and Arrow figure lines, but they're going to broaden their base a tiny bit. So now remember, these go on sale in 2017. So if you're about to run out to your local comic store and buy these or head on over to Amazon, hold your horses, gang. You got a tiny bit to wait. So we are getting Firestorm, Hawkgirl, and the Atom from Legends of Tomorrow. We are getting Constantine and Vixen from last season of Arrow. We are getting Zoom from The Flash, and we are getting Supergirl and Martian Manhunter from Supergirl. And I just want to call out that of all those figs, A, I really hope that that means we're getting more Constantine, but B, dude, whoever sculpted the Supergirl one did not do a great job on the face.
Did you guys talk last week about the news about Constantine might be coming back to CW? Did you guys go over that?
No, because that headline was very deceiving when you went and read the body of the article. Their whole argument was, well, it's on CW Seed, and the people are real happy with Matt Ryan. He's kind of a draw, so that means that DC might bring back Constantine. I was like, wow, a way to make a ton of connections that don't potentially exist and try and spin it into some clickbait.
There you go. Got to bait that click. So, Neil, I went to the comic book store today. I couldn't get there yesterday because of a variety of different things. And I'm looking at this next story. I'm like, yeah, baby, I got most of them. Go ahead and why don't you tell everybody what we're talking about.
As we said, we are right in the middle of Rebirth.
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 I am really happy with this event. I've got a bit of event fatigue, but Rebirth doesn't feel like an event. It feels like a correction. And it feels like it is the new status quo going forward. So this week, we had a whole bunch of Rebirth titles. We have the first Rebirth special of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps coming back. We've got Nightwing Rebirth number one. And then continuing on in some of the relaunch series, we've got Detective Comics number 936. We've got Action Comics number 959. And then notably, we've got Wonder Woman number 2 from Greg Rucka, which is just a fantastic series. And as well, we've got Flash number 2, which is, if you want something to tug at your heartstrings, if you're a classic Flash fan, this is the series for you. So definitely pop over to your local comic store and check these out. Support your local retailers. And if that's not for you, then definitely head on over to Comixology. Click. Remember that all DC titles are $2.99. Unlike, what is it, Civil War books are $5.99 right now or $4.99?
It varies. It's all over the map.
So, but some of them are thicker.
Some of them are thicker, but all DC titles are $2.99. Now, remember that some of them are in double shipping. So some of the biggies like Detective, Flash, Wonder Woman, Action, even Green Arrow are shipping twice a month. So it's really $6 a month, but it doesn't feel like it when you're only paying $3 a time.
I keep on referencing Audibly Exquisite. They were talking about this on Audibly Exquisite, and they were talking about cost per page when they were talking about the two comics at a lower price per month versus the bigger comic at a higher price. And really, they're liking the deal on the $2.99 for 50 pages per month versus $3.99 for 25 pages per month. So they're liking the deal of that. As it goes on, Neil, I had a question for you, or Chris, for that matter. Are you guys reading the other Wonder Woman title that's going on right now as well?
Negative, but I heard Frank Cho walked off from Dolan Moore variant covers. I saw an article on that today, too.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I know the Sensation wrapped up a little while ago. I know that the trade for Wonder Woman Earth 1, which was an Elseworlds-type title, just published a couple weeks ago, which had mixed reviews. It was an older title. But no, I'm sticking with the Rebirth, you know, the primary title right now.
Yeah.
I need to go and get Nightwing Rebirth number one.
Not on the shelf. I went today, not on the shelf. I was so glad that I actually had it in my pull list because...
It's okay. It's what Comixology's for if I can't find it on the shelf.
Or eBay or Amazon.
Yeah, and what I've heard is that the new Nightwing series is taking the best of the old Dick Grayson series that just wrapped up. And again, the great thing about Rebirth is it isn't ignoring what went before, but it's continuing, it's taking the best, but it's putting him back in the black and blue suit.
It's selectively ignoring things that went on before.
It's making excuses and moving forward.
So. Yeah. I gotta say, guys, I'm really enjoying my weekly trip to my local comic book store, and I do some Comixology titles as well, like all the Star Wars stuff, which I should have been doing in hard copy. I didn't, and I'm gonna have to wait for the trade paperbacks because my nephew, my 7-year-old nephew, I got up my iPad. He was bored at the cabin one day, and I'm like, "Hey, do you want to read a comic book?" And he's like, "I don't know. What do you got?" And he's like, "Ooh, Star Wars!" So he's like going through the Star Wars. And I'm like, "Ah." Oh. I got to get Star Wars so I can give it to him. So it's the uncle to nephew bonding going on there.
Think of the Poe Dameron series. I know we're crossing the streams here, but I've picked up a couple issues of Poe Dameron and it's working for me.
I like it. It's a lot of setup, gives you a better idea of how the Force Awakens world of Star Wars is working.
A lot of other independent space comics out right now, which I am really enjoying, and we'll talk all about that later at another time. But in the meantime, we got a voicemail this week. And this is our first voicemail in a while. I'm really excited to press play on this. Are you guys ready to hear this?
Let's do it.
Bring it on.
All right.
Hey, guys. It's Michelle. I have three thoughts about this week's Legend episode, Maroon. One, if you took a drink for each Star Trek and Star Wars reference, you'd probably be dead. Two, so the Time Masters are the Time Lords with Jedi principles. Okay, that's kind of interesting. I really thought the part about the fake name was a very interesting development. Now, some of the things that they do sort of make sense now. And three, after rewatching this episode, I understand Mick a lot more. Yes, he's a criminal, but after being insulted about his intelligence again, the whole IQ of meat thing, and finding out from Rip that he's only there because he's part of a package deal, well, I too would want to leave them behind. He felt betrayed, especially by Snart.
Oh, and she was cut off. Michelle, I'm so sorry if that was the voicemail. You're the first voicemail we've had in a while. Didn't think there was a cutoff, so I'm sorry if there was. And guys out there, if there is a cutoff, it's about 1 minute. And I thought it was longer.
Thought it was too.
If it's just a minute, you guys, just be aware you got a minute. But if you go longer, that's great too. Michelle, of course, has been a guest on the podcast here. Great to hear from her. She is also our social media coordinator. So thank you very much, Michelle. We appreciate all the work that you're doing on Facebook and Twitter for us. She'll be doing live tweets, by the way, when Arrow comes back in the main season.
Ooh. That is awesome.
You guys have anything to say about her voicemail, by the way?
She's right.
She nailed it.
You nailed it. And oh, by the way, it wouldn't matter how many references to Star Trek and Star Wars in a drinking game. One beer and I'm done. Take me to the ER. And for those new to Starling Tribune, I am allergic to alcohol. Can't drink. It's really bugging me too, because there's really good stuff out there that I want to try. Ugh, bugging me.
We'll try it all for you. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't SP. Worry. We got you covered.
Hey, this is the part in the show where we like to mention that, believe it or not, we are part of a network, part of the Gunna Geek Network. And if you love geeky shows, if you love shows on the CW-verse, on comic books, on comic book shows, general geekiness, Doctor Who, Game of Thrones, tech, if you like audio plays, we have got something on the network for you. And we'd like to take an opportunity to tell you about one of the other podcasts that is out right now, right this minute on your listening device or computer that you could go and download. And similar to how Like a Girl and Crimson Comet have released a bunch of new content, our friends over at Legends Podcast have also released a bunch of new content this week. So this week, go ahead and give Legends Podcast a try. They've released episode number 290 titled The Game, part of the Movies That Beef Has Never Seen arc. And as the crew closes in on episode 300, in this episode, Beef, Wing, and Shark Taco discuss the 1997 Michael Douglas thriller, The Game. The crew discusses the mind tricks and gets Beef talking about his first experience with this movie and so much more. Check them out at GunnaGeek.com.
GunnaGeek.com. Got to say it like that. It's just
I was trying, man. I was trying.
I know. You guys, you got to sing the geeks.live at the beginning. You got to GunnaGeek.com. Come on. You got to get it. And by the way, neither of you two are named SP, so stop doing that at the beginning when I'm not here. Just stop it. You're not SP. You're Chris and Neil.
I am channeling my inner SP right now.
Yeah, right. Just the deadpan. Let's go ahead and let's end the podcast. So, by the way, thank you very much, listeners and viewers, and everybody that's downloaded the podcast, everybody that's listened to us on Spreaker, the replays on YouTube, and thank you very much again to our video editor, Chris, who's done some awesome overlays. I really appreciate the work you do there, Chris, because I don't have to do it.
Cheers.
I want to go ahead and thank all the live participants in the Blab and Geeks.live chat. And if you want to join in on all the craziness, then join us live Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on blab.im, or just head over to geeks.live, where you can catch all our geeky content on the Gunna Geek Network. And don't forget that after the show, we always open up the fourth seat on the Blab interface for our live listeners to hang out and share their thoughts. You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on geeks.live. The next live show is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, where you get all your podcasting tips and tech podcasting goodness.
And while we've got you here, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you get a chance, give us a 5-star review on iTunes, like us on Facebook and on YouTube, and feel free to badger us on Twitter. You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And while you're there, make sure you go check out some of the other great content, like the 24/7 streaming available over at Geeks.live.
And if you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or like Michelle did this week, call us and leave a voicemail at 1-612-888-CAVE. That's 1-612-888-2283. And we'll be sure to play your message live on the air. Now, guys, before we sign off, SP, it is great to have you back from vacation, sir. Welcome back. And if our listeners want to hear more from where both of you guys are on the Gunna Geek Network, what other podcasts can they find you on, SP?
They can find me on... You really want me to list everything off?
I do. Okay. I do.
I'm on the GunnaGeek.com show. That's Monday nights, and also found at GunnaGeek.com for your RSS feed. I'm on the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the general Marvel comic universe. That's on Wednesday nights live, 9 p.m. at Geeks.live. I am on... it's a kind of a... narrated sort of solo podcast with segments with Neil on the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. long box edition, where we talk about the weekly Marvel comics that drop. I'm also on Better Podcasting. It's a podcast for the hobby podcaster. So all your tips and tricks, what to do, what not to do, and just to make your life easier as a hobby podcaster until you get that audience and you can actually make a bunch of money and go Hollywood.
Yeah. And Chris, where can our listeners find you?
So like SP, you can also find me on the GunnaGeek.com show every Monday night at 8:45 p.m. Eastern. On top of that, I'm also, of course, here on the Starling Tribune each week with you fine gentlemen. I am also doing a solo podcast called Nerd Alert News that you can find over at NerdAlertNews.com. And I stream that live from time to time on Facebook when I record. It really just depends if YouTube is going to fight me on that. And then every Sunday morning, I sit down with a few of my friends and kind of have a geeky roundtable discussion for the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, which has been going for a little over 4 years now, which is kind of scary.
That is awesome. Guys, great episode. Fun to hang out with you. That about wraps it up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open up the Blab interface to our live listeners? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag 2 Wave Rider control sticks.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag where's my GD flip kick.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off for another week with hashtag Captain Crunch for Captain. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.